and a Mae Whiting Berry. We are a family of nine. By Mae Whiting Berry. During our courting days, as we held hands, Herbert said, "Someday I will be a dentist." His father had a big family and no money. My father had nine children and about the same financial standing. I wondered how Herbert was ever going to be a dentist. But I kept silent. I remember he quoted from Orison Swett Marden's book, "He Can Who Thinks He Can." Didn't his father and my father do all right without a profession? But, explained Herbert, if we have faith in ourselves and in God, we can if we think we can. So that was the vehicle that was to carry us on. "Will you marry me?" "Yes," I said as fast as I could. "Would you like to take our honeymoon at the sheep camp?" We could hear the coyotes in the moonlight, while we worked night and day helping the used lamb. That did it. I was speechless. Herbert hurriedly explained that Joe Pattison had a sheep herd that was to lamb by mistake in February instead of the proper time in June. You see, Joe offered Herbert all the lambs, if the mothers lived. But if they died, we were to pay for all the sheep. We considered the risks. "Well," hesitated Herbert, "if a blizzard or heavy snow comes in February, we lose, but if warm, sunny weather comes, then Joe loses." Driving our own two horses and a borrowed wagon, we headed for the sheep camp on our wedding day. The trip took 8 hours and the red sun was setting in the west when we settled in a little Mexican adobe hut on the land. The snow was fighting the wind. Herbert called out the little window to the old Mexican herder. "Juan, drag your bed in here," he shouted. "You'll freeze to death out there." We shared the floor, where our bed was made of blankets spread on the dirt floor. Juan's bed filled the rest of the floor space. By morning, the worst blizzard Arizona had seen in 50 years was on the rage. I shuddered when I tried to think how many years it would take to pay for a dead sheep herd at $1.50 per day wages. "This is only January 30th, Herbert suggested hopefully. "They may not start to lamb till February 3rd. Sure enough, that February day, first came one little bleat, then another began. With the lambs came glorious sunshine. It spread over us like a magic carpet. We sang and danced for joy. "I think I see a dental school door opening and waiting for me," Herbert called out. I felt doubt, but didn't want to hamper that happy smile, so I just kept quiet and wondered what our parents would think. The next day we sat down on a rock under a cedar tree to rest. I asked in all soberness, "How much does it cost to go to dental school?" "More than we have," he smiled, "but someday." June came and Joe Pattison turned back to us 1-3 more fat lambs than there were mothers. Good sheep have twins and sometimes triplets. We sold the lambs and with our money we bought half interest in a sawmill, where Herbert worked days. At night we both studied school books, trying to improve ourselves. That first year brought us a baby girl. Effie we called her. In a few years, after much studying, we both passed the county school teacher's examination. This meant money and the dental college for Herbert, I thought. "There is a Mexican school up the river," Herbert suggested. "I can get it. But where could we live?" I questioned. "There's only a few Mexican houses and they are all occupied." "That's okay," Herbert smiled. I traded a saddle for a lumber house on a knoll above the Mexicans. So we're all okay. Another little girl came that year. We called her Mary. After 2 years teaching these Mexican children, they could read, "This is my hot, CZ cow." We were so happy to help them. We bought 100 heifers at $15 per head and paid all his checks on the heifers. No rent, no heat, no water or light bills. "Why break the checks?" I asked. "May," he answered, "we'll make it next year." But the next year brought our first son, Kay. "Nothing is more important than your first son. We'll make him a dentist, too," grinned Herbert. Now Herbert could work summers in the sawmill and teach school winters. Too much snow to run the mill in winter. Two more years and everything was in the swing. Yes, May Herbert sang out one night, as he sat down to the supper table. This next year will be the one. I waited till he was leaving for school the next morning and called to him, Herbert, we can't go next year. I'm going to have another baby. That's fine, he answered. We need the extra time to get ready. But I knew he was thinking of his dental school. How much money does it take? I asked again, to finish a dental college? I don't know yet, Herbert laughed. I slumped into a chair and began to figure. If we waited much longer, there would be too many train tickets to buy. Of course, Mrs. Sherwood, the midwife, only charged $4 for each baby. She came to our home and did the nursing for 10 days besides delivering the baby. So that wasn't bad, $16 for four children. Lee came next. He was 10 months old when the huffing, roaring train stopped in Holbrook, Arizona. Only minutes to pick up seven blanketed Indians, two gaudy Mexicans, and one white family. We were the white family. Herbert had to literally shove Effie and Mary onto the train. They had never seen a train before and were frightened. I dropped Lee into a seat and made a dash for Kay, who was headed for the steps. Herbert placed the suitcases and bags in a neat row on the racks over our heads. From there on to Chicago, all we had to do was get drinks of water, bags of cookies and parade to and from the restrooms. I was worn to a rag. Had our parents been right when they said we were crazy? Was a neighbor Kendall Overson right when he said, "You don't need any more education. It just makes you miserable." We were about ready to agree with them all when we stepped off that train in the middle of Chicago. My husband was carrying two suitcases with pillows strapped to them. One he dropped in his mad dash into the street just in time to beat Kay from the path of an automobile. By this time a mounted policeman, bless his heart, noticed the unusual display of the West and came forward to clear the way for us to get ourselves into a taxi. But our troubles were not over yet. The following day we went house hunting. Every place the same answer. No children and no dogs. One woman said, "Good heavens, four," and slammed the door. Then she opened it again and snapped, "You ought to know better than that." "Lady," I replied with dignity, "do you suggest we drown them?" Again a slam. We were so discouraged when we found a lovely apartment waiting for us. Such a kind landlord who took a special liking to our two little girls. From that first morning the neighbors began counting. "Yes, I'm sure I saw two little girls. Yes, I saw a baby at the window. One little boy came up the steps. So that makes four," agreed the neighbors. "You people from the sticks make me sick. We know you for what you are." That was my greeting from Mrs. Burdett and apt number four, "But for heaven's sake don't have any more." I made no promises and, after Herbert graduated, we eventually had three more: Norma, Helen and Dean. One night we decided I would teach school in Arizona. Our money was going faster than we had planned. I took the children to Alpine, Arizona, where I taught in a one-room school in the mountains. One small house consisting of a bedroom and kitchen housed us. It was not enough house to keep out the snow. I kicked the snow off my own bed, built the fire in a wood stove, took the top quilt off the children's bed, carried it to the door and shook off 2 inches of snow. None of us had colds or got sick that winter. I waited in snowdrifts to milk my cow, but was never late for school. Herbert and his cousin Frank Brown roomed and boarded together. He was there in the medical school. They bought day-old bread, canned corn and fruit from a fire sale. They managed to live on the very least possible. After 3 years of study, Herbert graduated from the Chicago College of Dental Surgery in 1916. He is a dentist. Our son, Kay, graduated from the USC Dental College in 1938. He is a dentist. Lee graduated from the University of Maryland in 1943. He is a surgeon. Our daughter Helen married a Buck private in 1942. He is Dr. Aubrey and Ellen, now a dentist. Norma served as a secretary in Washington, D.C. during the war. Mary has been a school teacher for many years. Effie was a radio announcer at KOY in Phoenix. Dean is a pre-medical college student at USC. Our granddaughter Joyce L. Cooper's husband, Jack, is a junior taking pre-dental classes. That makes 7 children besides ourselves. We are just an ordinary family, like other American families. Any family can who thinks he can if they live good, clean lives, have faith in themselves and in their God. There is no end to progression in this life or the life hereafter. Update May wrote this piece in the 1950s. The creative writing class assignment well illustrates the sacrifices May and Herbert made in behalf of education in an era when schooling beyond high school was not common, where grants and scholarships were unheard of, and where survival was still a lifelong struggle for many. They were willing to set ordinary comforts aside for years in order to fulfill their dreams of improving themselves. Dean graduated from USC Medical School and spent his career in ophthalmology. Jack Cooper is now retired from dentistry. We, their posterity, are blessed to be the recipients of May and Herbert's legacy. We owe them a deep debt of gratitude for their examples of courage and tenacity and for their many sacrifices, and for teaching us to have faith in God and in ourselves. Among their posterity, 2 more dentists have been added, 4 doctors, 5 nurses, a graduate of West Point, numerous teachers, a professor, a banker, several lawyers, an architect, a member of the diplomatic corps, accountants, businessmen, secretaries, a city planner, stylists, a mechanical engineer, skilled construction workers, a lobbyist, a judge, family therapists, musicians, artists, a sculptor, a ship's captain, authors, financial planners, many computer scientists, web page designers, and engineers. Summer 2006, one of their great-grandsons will be awarded a doctorate in fiber optics.